Howdy and welcome to the Fastest Lap Podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Join us to discuss the US GP, with the Ferrari rolling down a hill and Verstappen pitting without notice. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fergal. Hello everyone. Last week I introduced our episode with the words how nice it was to see a track with natural track limits like Suzuka, but this week it's the exact opposite. We came to Austin, USA, and drivers were going miles off the track, and even posted it on Twitter. Crofty read it out on air that track limits were really a joke. Fergal, what's your opinion on it? Are you also a bit annoyed by it that we don't have really consistency on that topic?
Yeah, the consistency part of it kind of, it's kind of annoying, to be honest, because you don't really know when you turn up at a race whether you're going to be seeing cars penalized for going off track or not. And yeah, it's a bit confusing. I don't understand why it's not imposed from race to race, while, you know, it's just imposed to whatever track they feel like. And yeah, it's a bit strange.
Yeah, I think it differentiates the good drivers from the bad drivers, because if you can attack a corner and still keep two tires within the white lines, you can get a good lap together and really see what you're capable of doing. And nowadays with the track limits, you just attack a corner. If you miss it, well, no problem, you go out and that's it. So I think it really takes away some kind of skill of the drivers.
Yeah, and it's not really it's not good to see. We see a lot of pundits making reference to like football, as in if the ball goes over the line, you know, out, you know, just white lines to define on a football pitch where the ball goes. And I think it should be the same for everyone, that the track limits should be in place.
Yeah, but actually it's a bit sad that we have to talk about track limits, so leaving that behind, let's talk about the race, let's talk about racing. And everyone was talking about how would Hamilton start, how would the Mercedes get away off the line, and actually both drivers had a pretty good start from the initial launch, but after that I was watching it live and I thought, Rosberg, what are you doing? I mean, every child knows that you should cover the inside line. What does Rosberg? He goes to the outside line and Ricardo goes through. What was your opinion on that?
Yeah, Rosberg actually had a pretty good start. I think it was just he was on the dirtier side of the track. And Hamilton actually did have a good start this time. Yeah. And Rosberg probably should have covered the inside line. I think what he thought was he could take more speed using a wider entry to the corner and then try and go up the inside of Hamilton in the next corner. But unfortunately, that didn't work and Ricardo was able to get into second.
Yeah, and what I thought was also, I mean, Rosberg tried the outside last year and it didn't work then. So the question is, why should have walked that today, yesterday?
I think maybe he had more confidence because Mercedes team have told them not to, that they can't make contact again. And, you know, if contact is made, like, it's all Hamilton's to lose, to be honest, because when they go wheel racing, it's Hamilton that needs to be careful, not Rosberg, because Hamilton is the one that needs to hold back the points. So maybe he just thought that it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, maybe. But there were some cars behind who had even more trouble. For example, Bottas and Hülkenberg, and I think also Vettel was kind of involved there. I mean, the cameras didn't really catch it on the start, but I think somehow Hülkenberg and Bottas collided, then Vettel cut across Hülkenberg. The end result was Hülkenberg had to retire and Bottas had a puncture or something. Did you see this incident a little bit more in detail?
I didn't really see too much of the incident, to be honest, but from what I gather is that, Hülkenberg straight up blamed Vettel for it, that he just cut across and, caused a chain reaction, really. So, I think I've only heard it from Hülkenberg's point of view that it was Vettel's fault. I looked at it like very briefly, and it does seem that Vettel took a much narrower line than what he could have done, and possibly caused that incident.
It reminds me of Brazil 2012, where he also really cut across the inside line and got spun around.
Yeah. That famous one where he came back from last to win.
Yeah,
did he win the race? Well, he won the championship anyway.
Yeah, he won the championship. I think he finished in P5 or something. But still that's what this incident reminded me of. A pretty eventful first lap or eventful first corner. Then, we followed the cars around turn 6, 7, 8, 9. And I think it was turn 10. The happened before the long straight. And I think Alonso was attacking Kvyat and Perez was in front. Kvyat tried to defend his line, braked far too late, and straight went into the back of Perez. And I don't know what to say. I mean, he should learn from his mistakes. I mean, he did the exact same thing in Russia, where he ran into the back of Vettel, braking too late. I mean, I really can't understand why Red Bull resigned him. What did you think of that incident? I mean, it's black and white in my opinion. He just braked too late and went into Paris.
Yeah, I agree. He just broke too late and caused an incident. And to be honest, there's not much more to read into that, I don't think.
Yeah, but I already said it. Toro Rosso or Red Bull re-signed Kvyat for 2017 and decided for him and against Pierre Gasly, who did a test for Red Bull a few weeks ago. And I'm not quite sure. Maybe Gasly even wins the GP2 title, so he's a talented young driver. So why would you keep Kvyat, who keeps doing mistakes like that and has no chance in getting into a Red Bull in the future, I think.
Yeah, he has no chance of getting into a Red Bull, but I think he still deserves a chance in F1. And I think the main reason why they kept him was because they felt that Gasly isn't yet ready for F1, which Kvyat will, Kvyat will love to hear that, because he was in talks, he was rumoured to be in talks with Force India, I think, although many drivers were. But no, I'm happy that he retains his seat. And what he'll be doing next season is, it's quite funny actually, because Red Bull have retained him, for their team or for Toro Rosso, for that system. But yet, it's sure enough that that Kvyat is going to be driving to keep his seat in F1 for another team. He's going to be trying pressing other teams, not Red Bull, because he must know that he's not going to get his chance there again.
Yeah, I mean, you think he deserves a seat. In my opinion, he doesn't really, because he had his chance in Red Bull, didn't take the chance, and also in his races at Toro Rosso, he didn't really show something outstanding. Of course, Sainz is a very strong teammate, but I'm not really a fan of him, to be honest.
Well, I think you got to ask if Red Bull said that they don't think Gasly is ready for F1, you kind of got to go, okay, well then who else can they put back in the seat? Kvyat's really the only option, and I'm happy. I think next season will be vital for Kvyat, and he'll be looking to prove himself F1 worthy.
Yeah, also maybe with the rule change coming up for next year. They maybe wanted to retain some consistency in the team, and that's what Kvyat is good for, isn't he?
Yeah, I suppose. And I remember Carlos Sainz saying a couple of months ago that he thinks that P3 is possible for Toro Rosso in the Constructor Championship for next season, which is, not going to lie, a big ask. But, you know, it would mean either outperforming, you'd have to think Red Bull or Ferrari. So, Toro Rosso, I think they will have a better year next year, and possibly they just wanted to keep the same lineup just to bring them through the next phase of change in F1.
Yeah, I remember that you said that in one of the previous episodes, that he said that Toro Rosso could be in P3, which it's quite ambitious, let's say it like that. Mm. But coming back from Toro Rosso, from Kvyat, to the crash in turn 10, and then the race unfolded. Verstappen was able to keep in front of Raikkonen, and or was it Vettel?
Yeah, you're right.
And Ricciardo stayed in P2, Rosberg in P3, and everything was going along quite nicely, and then Ricciardo pitted with the super soft tires quite early, as a lot of people expected. But then, just one lap later, or was it two laps later, Verstappen pitted as well on the soft tires, which was quite interesting. I mean, normally you would expect the soft tires to wear not as fast as the super soft tires, and that he could have gone for a lot longer stint. So do you know why he pitted that early?
I actually don't. I assume it was just he just didn't like the tires, and the tires were degrading too quickly for him. It was strange to see him pit that early. I mean, we've seen other cars do 18, 19, 20 laps on those soft tires. So, yeah, it was very strange to see him pit so early. But in the end, he had a bit of a strange race, I think, for Verstappen, because we had that very strange pit stop at his next pit stop, I think it was.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very, very, very strange.
I mean, how could you misunderstand? Or normally they call you in five times, box, 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 and pit confirm and everything. I mean, how could you just think they called you in and box?
Yeah, well, my understanding of it is that they said to him to push. That's all they said to him. They said, push this lap. And somehow he thought, okay, that means I must be pitching. That's what he said anyway in the post race interviews. Okay. And I mean, like, surely he would have said to them, okay, does this mean I'm, you know, boxing the next lap or you know, whatever? But no, he just came in, and yeah. But you know what? Fair play to the Red Bull guys. They didn't know he was coming in, and they reacted very, very quickly. And yeah, they actually did a really, really good job on the car, considering that they didn't know he was coming in.
Yeah, if you compare it with Monaco, where they had the same problem with Ricciardo, it took much longer there. So, yeah, I think it was a good step from that. Maybe they even addressed that issue, and now they've got some processes in place that if a car really comes in, they can quickly get everything they need and service the car.
Yeah, I reckon they're probably always on standby anyway, as I assume for every team they have a plan that if a car, you know, has to make a quick pit stop, like a quick decision for a pit stop, they'll be ready to go. It doesn't happen very often at all. And actually, coming back to what you said about Ricciardo, I think that incident was quite, it was different. In the fact that, well, the Verstappen one was it was a bit harder for them to react, because with Ricciardo and Monaco, they knew he was coming in, but they just didn't have the right tires ready. But in Austin, they didn't know Verstappen was coming in, and they didn't have the tires ready. So hats off to Red Bull for their effort in that pit stop.
Yeah, definitely. Very good job by them. Not so good job by Verstappen. We'll come to the end of the race for him a little bit later. But before that, let's talk a little bit about Ferrari again. I mean, there's so much pressure on those guys, and everyone expects them to at least deliver a podium or something. And again, in qualifying, they were slower than Red Bull. In the race, they were there or thereabout. But then Vettel had some kind of problems with his rear wing, where the rear wing suddenly lost downforce because of some tire marbles that got stuck there. And then Kimi's weird three-stop strategy, I absolutely didn't understand. And then, additional to that, the really messed up pit stop, and some Iceman rolling down a hill.
Once again, not a good weekend for Ferrari. I mean, in qualifying, Vettel was 1 second, I think it was 1.1 second away from Hamilton on pole. I mean, that's absolutely huge. This was the season where it was meant to be, you know, Hamilton versus Vettel, Mercedes versus Ferrari, but it's not gone to plan at all. I think Vettel's only had like 6 podiums this year or something like that, and if you compare that to last season, he had
13 of them, something.
Yeah, it was something like that. And you know, people say that, oh, Vettel, he finished fourth. But to be honest, the fourth was handed to him with the two retirements of Verstappen and Raikkonen.
Yep.
And he was 23 seconds behind Ricciardo. He was in third. So, just not a good weekend at all for Vettel. And Raikkonen, to be honest, Raikkonen, in practice, he was struggling. And in qualifying, I think he actually did an okay job. He did a better job than Vettel anyway. But then, in the race, must really the same as Vettel, just couldn't really get it in anywhere. And that pit stop was very strange because the wheel, I mean, the pit man was still putting the wheel on and the green light came on. And so it wasn't the guy who was putting on the wheel's fault, or it wasn't Raikkonen's fault. So, it's very unfortunate for Kimi.
Yeah, I really was wondering, how could something like that happen? I mean, normally every gunman has some kind of button he presses when he's ready, or maybe it's something automatic, I don't know. Do you know how it works? Is it really the man pressing the button, or is it maybe that the clever system detects when the nut is tightened up, that then it's automatically green light?
Yeah, I think it's the latter one that you suggested there about when it's the wheels connected, they know. But I'm not 100% certain on that.
So maybe there, it's the system detected some wrong forces. Maybe the nut wasn't really on, and the force was really high. So it thought, the nut is tightened up, and went for the green light. Maybe something like that.
Yeah, well, it must be an efficient system because we never see anything like this again. You know, we never see anything like this happen. So, it was very strange and not really a good way. I know there's no really good way to retire from a race, but that certainly isn't ideal.
But I was really laughing. I mean, I really like Kimi, you know, but it looked so funny, him rolling down the hill, watching in the rear mirror to park the car. It was quite funny.
It was funny. And he was actually quite smart because you're not allowed to reverse down pit lane, but he never selected reverse. He just let the car roll, which was quite smart of him, actually. He didn't break any rules, but he looked like he did.
But all in all, not a good weekend for Ferrari. They can be lucky that Red Bull only scored with one car, with Ricciardo, because as we hinted at earlier, Verstappen, he went on the back straight and suddenly something broke in the car. At first it sounded very, very strange, something clunking around in the engine, but yeah, I think they confirmed that it was a gearbox failure, because the gearbox was in the last race of its cycle, so yeah, not a good quality there.
No, it wasn't good for Verstappen, and what was even worse was the fact when he pulled up and brought out the virtual safety car, then that hampered Ricciardo, because the Mercedes effectively got a free pit stop. So yeah, that was it was killing two birds with one stone there for Red Bull on the other end. So yeah, that wasn't how they wanted it to go. But Red Bull, I mean, the reliability for Red Bull this year has been fantastic. I mean, it's been very, very good.
Yeah, if you compare it to last year.
Yeah, they've had tremendous reliability this year. So yeah, I think it was just like you said, it was in the last stages of its life, and it just gave up on that Grand Prix.
But to be honest, I was quite surprised that they brought out the virtual safety car, because I mean, he parked a long way off the racetrack. Of course, it was a fast corner, but normally the marshals should be able to push the car away quite quickly. But maybe due to the fact that the gearbox was damaged, somehow the whole car was stationary and wasn't movable. But yeah, I was actually quite surprised, because I didn't think it was really a place of danger. But of course, yeah, with when they had to bring the tractors on track, I mean, we saw what can happen to 2014 Suzuka. Mm. So maybe it was the right decision. But as you said, Verstappen could have stopped on another point on the track.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just better safe than sorry. Yeah. He wasn't allowed to bring him back to the pits, was he? Because he was, I think he was instructed to pull over.
Yeah, I think the team said he should pull over.
Which again, I was a little bit surprised about, because he only had like one corner left to go before he reached the pits. But yeah, I mean, I think the virtual safety car was the right decision, because you don't really know what can happen, and it's yeah, it's better to be safe.
Yeah, but as you said, it was basically a gift to Mercedes. They could stop, they double stacked the drivers, and they went out in the lead. So basically the podium was done back then. And yeah, after that there were only three people that were really fighting, or let's say five if you want to include Kvyat and Magnussen. But yeah, there was the group of three cars, Massa, Alonso and Sainz, with Sainz in front. And yeah, it was quite entertaining to see Sainz with worn soft tires and Massa behind, and Alonso coming with rather fresh tires behind that. And yeah, it was quite entertaining to see Alonso overtaking those cars. At first, of course, overtaking Massa in turn 14? Was it 14? I think 14 it was. Yeah, the banked wheel drove off the track. How did you see that incident? To say it like that, I was very happy that the stewards didn't penalize that move, because we want to see racing.
Yeah, you know, I'm all about racing as well, but if they had penalized that incident, I wouldn't have been surprised, because Massa actually got a puncture from that incident. And, you know, when stuff like that happens, you question, should it be penalised? I mean, I hate to see, you know, overtakes penalised, but what I don't get is, you know, drivers do risky overtakes, and the drivers come out clean and everything's fine. Maybe there's a little bit of a barrage, but everything's fine and there's no penalties. But then when a car actually gets a puncture, then there's no penalties. It's again that consistency that I don't really understand. But yeah, coming back to it, I mean, Alonso, he did a good job to get by Massa, and then he came up to the back of Sainz. And you know, they've raced a couple of times from the start of 2015 to now, and it's fantastic watching them, because Sainz idolizes Alonso. I mean, when Sainz was 12, 13 years old, he was watching Fernando Alonso win world championships. And, you know, obviously they're both Spanish. So, it's always great to see them race cleanly. And, Alonso was very happy it's safe to say after that battle.
Yeah, I mean the team radio was just gold.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you said, it's kind of a Vettel Schumi story with Sainz and Alonso, I think. And yeah, but at the end, yeah, Sainz didn't really have a choice to defend there because yeah, his tires were just too worn, and Alonso went by, finished P5, and driver of the day got Verstappen, which was quite interesting. But that's the vote of the Formula One, the official Formula One vote. Let's discuss our driver of the weekend. Driver of the weekend. We discuss which driver showed the best performances in practice, quali, and race. So, talking about the driver of the weekend, there are a lot of options. Well, I wouldn't call Verstappen in on that because, yeah, it wasn't really, aside from a few good overtakes, there wasn't really anything special. Yeah, let's give you my options for driver of the weekend. First of all, you have to say Hamilton. He didn't put a foot wrong. He out-qualified his teammate. He had a very good race. So, yeah, nothing really he did wrong. And so I think he had a very good race weekend. Also, Daniel Ricciardo, of course, he could have finished P2 without the virtual safety car. Maybe. We don't know. Red Bull was quite strong. He out-qualified his teammate as well, so pretty good weekend from him as well. Alonso, we just talked about, P5 in a McLaren, which is really, really good considering their Honda engine and yeah, maybe not so powerful chassis on some tracks, let's say it like that. Carlos Sainz, P6 in a really underpowered Toro Rosso. They said they'll lose, yeah, 0.7 of a second per lap. Very good performance. And also Romain Grosjean scoring a point in their home race in Austin. Very good and solid result for them. Would you add someone to that list, or who would you pick as your driver of the weekend, Fergal?
I would add another driver to that list, and my driver of the weekend was Marcus Ericsson.
Okay.
Ericsson, I think, did a fantastic job this weekend. He got out of Q1. He got that Sauber out of Q1 and brought it into Q2, which we haven't seen very often at all this season. And even in the race, he did a fantastic job. He was up in P11 at one point and stayed there for quite a while. I mean, he was there for a good few laps in the middle of the race, and then he was overtaken by the two Renaults. He was overtaken by Kvyat, I believe it was, and Magnussen. But Magnussen was on the fresh tires and easily overtook him, and he finished P13, I think it was, which I think he had a consistent weekend, and yeah, something we haven't seen too often from Ericsson, and yeah, I think he is my driver of the weekend.
Yeah, that's a pretty good choice, actually. I didn't really focus on him too much. Did Sauber try one-stop strategy or something? I heard something like that. Or did they two-stop?
I can't remember what they tried. All I know is that at the end of the race, he had very worn medium tires. I think it was a two-stop, yeah. It was a two-stop,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, very, very good strategy. Very good drive, of course, from Ericsson, as you said. But all in all, I'd really go for Alonso. I mean, P5,
yeah.
Of course, with those overtakes at the end, he really had to make it count. There was really pressure on him overtaking Sainz in the last lap. So really impressive by him. I still think Alonso is one of the best drivers on the grid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he is my driver of the weekend. Ericsson is your driver of the weekend. So, yeah, that's our votes. And I think those are both better than what we've seen from the official Formula One vote.
Comment of the week. Get featured on the show by telling us your opinion.
Comment of the week. Yeah, today we don't have any questions or comments from our listeners. Of course, if you want to ask us anything, Write us in the comments on YouTube, on Facebook, or if you want to send us an email, it's info@thesimracer.com. Yeah, send us everything you want to ask us or you want to comment on. But the comment of the week this week comes from a driver. It's the team radio of Verstappen, which I really liked, and I thought this must get featured on the show. I really love when the engineer came on and said, "Okay, Max, we really need to get the stint length." And Verstappen just answered, "Yeah, I'm not here to finish fourth."
Yeah, fantastic to hear that. I mean, most drivers probably would have said, "Yeah, okay," and hung back, protected the tires. But yeah, Verstappen, I mean, he hasn't shown his shy side. I don't think he has one. Yeah, he's an out and out racer, Verstappen. And yeah, it was great to hear that. I'm not here to finish fourth.
Yeah, as you said, of course, some moves of him are really on the edge and really aggressive, but I mean, he's a true racer, and I mean, that's what we all love, and that's why he has so many fans.
Yeah, he does have a lot of fans, but I think, I mean, coming back to something I think we've talked about before, he lost a lot of respect, I think, after the Belgian Grand Prix because of his defensive maneuvers. And I think that was kind of the point where people started to realize, you know, he doesn't mess around. If he wants, well, when you're attacking him, he will not give you the position easily, you know. And it's just the way he is. And then even when the new rule was brought in about his driving, he said he won't change. He's not going to change.
Yeah.
So, that's gonna be interesting to see how that unfolds.
So maybe we can even see how that unfolds in the next race. The next race is actually this week, this Sunday, in Mexico. And yeah, of course, Mexico famous for the very, very long home straight and a difficult infield with high speed corners also. What do you think? Who will be good in Mexico? Of course, Mercedes. What a surprise! but who else?
Mercedes are going to be up there. You know, I think Ferrari will probably be looking towards this weekend to jump to get a result over Red Bull. I think it should be a track that suits them. It has the sort of balance between high speed and cornering efficiency, so it should be good to see that. One thing I remember about last year was Mexico had the best crowd out of the whole year, without a doubt. And all the fans were cheering on Sergio Perez, who, you know, isn't even driving for a top team, and the support he received last year was unbelievable. And hopefully it can be the exact same again this year, because you could even, I know the current engines aren't as loud as they used to be, but I mean, they're still pretty loud, and you could hear the crowd over the engines, which I thought was actually just amazing to hear. So yeah, I look forward to seeing the crowd again. Hopefully it'll turn out like they did last year.
Yeah, of course, now the Austin GP set a benchmark. I think I read some numbers with nearly 300,000 visitors there, which is absolutely crazy. But yeah, as you said, the stadium section at the end of the track in Mexico, I mean, that's just awesome. If you, especially on race day, when you come around the infield and see just the wall of people, I mean, this must be awesome, especially as a Mexican driver.
Yeah, it looks incredible, you know, just going under the fans, and it's a real iconic section of track. I think there's only really a few tracks that have iconic corners, you know, Austin, Turn 1, Baku, that really tight section. You know, it's different to like Spa or Rouge. So, and I think this is another one that that could embed the famous F1 sections or corners, because it is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, maybe. And one final question. Do you think we will have a new world champion next weekend?
No. I doubt it. It's possible, but it's unlikely. Of course, Rosberg has to win this in Mexico, and if Hamilton finishes 10th or lower, Rosberg will win the championship.
Or if Hamilton has again some mechanical problems, which is quite not that unusual this season.
Yeah, and actually, I thought if Hamilton finishes 10th, of course he'll claim a point in the race. But if Rosberg wins, he still wins the championship, because even if Rosberg retired from the next two races, and Hamilton won the next two races, they'd be equal on points.
Yep.
But Rosberg would have one extra win over Hamilton, and that would be quite amazing actually if the championship came down to that, because it'd be super close and super exciting. But yeah, I don't think. I'd be very surprised if Rosberg won the championship in Mexico, but you know, you never know. It's Formula One.
Yes, I'm sure there'll be a lot to talk about again next week. So join us next week for the 9th episode of the Fastest Lap podcast. So see you then. Wherever you are listening, we would really appreciate your feedback by commenting or rating the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.